Good to see you back this evening. And I believe you may have one or two that were not able to make it this morning that's here this evening. We're glad to see that as well. Or this afternoon, since this is the middle of the afternoon. But anyway, I'm glad that we have the opportunity, and I'm glad that we have the interest, each of you, to come and to study further and to worship the Lord this evening. Turning to 1 Samuel chapter 26. This has to do with King Saul. And part of the time that he was at warfare, basically speaking, with David. And the things that are said here is that one of those times when Saul kind of came to himself and realized that, the position he'd taken, and makes a confession concerning it to David, in regard to David. And notice what he says. Then said Saul, I've sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because that my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. Behold, I have played the fool, and have erred exceedingly. I want to focus on that last part of that verse, that last expression. I have played the fool, and erred exceedingly. I have no doubt that if each of us would examine our lives and look back on our lives from time that we became accountable unto God, even unto now, that we could pick out times, I know about me, that I can pick out times when I can say the same thing. I played the fool and erred exceedingly. One of the great things is that you don't have to continually, forever, live with the consequences of that. Because of the fact there's forgiveness and redemption available. But we may have to live with the temporal consequences even there. But as far as the eternal is concerned. But I want us to think about that idea that I have played the fool. Sometimes we use the expression, and have used it often, I just acted a fool. Or so-and-so just acted a fool. And indeed, we do at times. Saul had been envious and malicious toward David. And in that envy and malicious attitude, he had indeed played the fool. And now he comes to realize that. And not only had he been that toward David, he'd also been in rebellion against God. And in all that, he says, I have erred exceedingly and played the fool. Unfortunately for Saul, even after that, he did some mighty stupid things. But anyway, Saul makes that observation, that confession. And the fact is, most intelligent or otherwise intelligent people find themselves at some time or other acting a fool, or often playing the fool. And if we will be aware of areas where that happens more often than it does maybe in others, it helps us always to do a better job of managing things where that we won't play the fool as often as perhaps we would otherwise. And in order to help us to remember these areas, we're going to talk about five, maybe tonight, areas where that one plays the fool often. All of them begin with the letter M, and that may help us somewhere, add some way to remember them as we think about them and review it in our minds. The first area they want to notice is in the area of money. In the area of money, people often act a fool. And the Bible talks about those who acted foolishly, who acted a fool when it came to money. And when we're talking about money, we're talking about all material things. Money and things that money can buy. The rich fool is, I guess, the prime example in the New Testament of one who played the fool with his goods and with his money. Luke chapter 12 and verse 20. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall these things be, those things be which thou hast provided? Now he tells the man he was a fool. In other words, what he's saying to him, you acted a fool. You acted foolishly in this thing. Now, what had he done? Well, for one thing, he was very greedy. And for one thing, he also, he placed all of his security in material things and did not place his security in God. He, if you remember the story, his idea was that I'll pull down my barns and I'll build big ones. And if I fill them up, the idea would be I'll build big ones and so on. And he finally comes down to the point where he says, I have much laid up, this is a paraphrasing of course, but I have much laid up for many years to come. So I'm secure, financially secure. Don't have anything to be concerned about, worry about. And that's when the Lord told him, God told him, Thou fool, this night your soul will be required of you. In other words, this is going to be it. You're going to die tonight. Now I want to know something. Who are these men going to be? What security are they going to offer now? And what was his problem? His problem was not necessarily that he made bumper crops. And it was not necessarily that he even stored them up for future use if need be. His big problem was they placed all of his security in those things and did not look past them to the God that gave him those things. And give God the honor, give God the praise, and to realize that all the material things he had could not bring him eternal security. The best that they could do was give him some measure of earthly security, and could not in any way bring him eternal security. Once he died, every barn full became somebody else's. It wasn't his. It either would become the possession of his heirs, or if he had no heirs, it would become possession of somebody else. But he would have no use for them after he died. And what he's telling me is, you're a fool to put all of your security, all of your trust in these material things, material wealth, and didn't make preparation and provisions for life after death. And so he says, you're a fool. He acted a fool. He played the fool. There are several ways that one can allow money to make a fool of you. One of them is by coveting it. That is, by coveting what someone else has. And it says in 1 Timothy chapter 6, 8 through 10, and having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish, now there is it, foolish, and hurtful lust, which drawn men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil. Now notice he does say money is the root of all evil. I've heard that many times. But he says the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. They become covetous of money. That's their aim. That's their goal. That's what they want to get. And so their life centers around that. And so they are giving themselves to accumulating things by hook or crook. And they fall into many sorrows. Sometimes they may be caught in some illicit deal in order to gain more money. Or maybe that they are so covetous of money, and then when they don't get it, they get so disappointed that brings them sorrow. And just on and on. But they pierce themselves through with many sorrows when they have the love, the inordinate love for money and material things. It may be by even hoarding that which they have. And Ananias and Sapphira were guilty of two things. One, they hoarded, and they wanted to keep that which they had when those who could have received it would have received a great benefit from it. But the second thing was, they lied about what they had given and were rebuked for it. So by being covetous and of a hoarding, greedy disposition, they wanted on the one hand to have the name of being generous by the name of giving all that they had received from the sale of their goods to the poor. And yet, they held back a part of it. And they conspired to hold it back. And you remember the story how that they both were struck dead as a result of it. But it all was rooted in their love, their inordinate love for money, material things. They had those material things, and even the when they were rebuked for it, they said, well, when you had your land or your goods, what, were they not your own? And even when you sold it, was not the price of it, was that money not still your own? They had the right to make the decision. But they're having that. There's a twofold problem. One, they didn't want to appear to be stingy. They did not want to appear to be greedy, on the one hand. They wanted to appear to be generous. And so they allowed that to cause them to conspire, to lie against to the Holy Spirit and lie unto God. And in doing that, they brought death upon themselves as an object lesson forevermore. That you can't, as someone said, you can't mess with God, because God knows everything that's involved. So, again, they played the fool when it came to their material goods or their money. And then there was Judah, the nation of Judah in the Old Testament. Let's notice maybe three or four verses in Malachi. Malachi in the third chapter and verse 8 and maybe 9 and 10. The question was raised to the nation of Judah by God through the prophet Malachi. Verse 8, will a man rob God? Yet, you have robbed me. God is asking the question through Malachi to these people. Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. Well, then they answered, wherein have we robbed thee? He's accused them of robbing God. They said, well, when do we do it? He says, in tithes and offerings. They had been commanded of the Old Testament, in the according to that law. They had been, first of all, they commanded to give a tenth of what they had in order to sustain the priesthood and their activities. And then there's all different kinds of offerings that, in addition to that tenth, that they had to offer from time to time. And they withheld them from God. And they withheld that which they should have been given to the Lord. And he says in verse 9, you are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now that herewith, saith the Lord of hosts. If I will not open you, so he says, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. So they had robbed them by not giving of the tithes that they were commanded to give, by not offering the sacrifices they had been commanded to sacrifice. And then he says to the remnant, he said, bring the tithes to the storehouse, that there may be meat or food in mine house. And prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven. What is he saying? You're not prospering now. You're not getting the rain that you ought to get. You're not getting the blessings that you ought to be getting. And now he's saying, I'm going to tell you why. One of the reasons you're not getting it is because you haven't given back of that which you received. And he says, you prove me. That is, you check it out. And you see, if I will not open the windows of heaven, now not pour out my blessings, and that there shall not be room enough to receive it, you try me out and see if I won't give you all these things if you'll do what's right. If you do what's right by the tithes and the offerings. Because of their greed and their stinginess with not giving the tithes and offerings, what evidently God has done, he withheld from them the rain and what it took for them to have the prosperity that they ought to have. And he's telling them, if you will start now, and of course the implication is they'd have to do it from the heart, but if you start now doing that, then you see if I don't prosper you more. So they again, they played the fool. It didn't make sense. They, by withholding from God, who had they hurt most? They hurt themselves. God could get along without any tithe that they had, and God could get along without any offering they had. He'd given those commands for their good, and God could get along without it. But who had they hurt? They'd hurt themselves, because he tithes that to their own prosperity. And since they were not prospering, as a result of that, they were hurting themselves and not hurting anybody else. And thus, they were playing a fool in doing it. And in James chapter 5, he talks about those who are rich masters over servants. And he says in the 5th chapter, verse 1, go ye now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. You have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which of you kept back by fault, cries, and the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Now he says, the hire of the laborers you've kept back by fraud. Well, what had he done to them? He says, you weep and howl for the miseries that shall come upon you. You're going to reap misery as a result of that. You're not hurting anybody but yourself. By fraud, keeping back just wages from those that you've hired to tend your fields. Again, they were playing the fool with it. And often people will do the same thing today. They will withhold unjustly from those who do their work, thinking they're prospering themselves by doing, and when in reality all they're doing is laying up for themselves misery that's to come later. And even by wasting it. You remember the prodigal son? He went to the far country and wasted his substance in riotous living. Well, where did he wind up? He wound up in the hog pen, wishing he could go back to his father and just be a servant. And finally he decided to do that, go back and ask for the mercy of his father. And he played the fool, because he wanted his inheritance now, so he could go out and spend it foolishly and waste it. And he did. And he paid for it dearly. And any time that we misuse God's material blessings in any way, you can mark it down. It's going to come back to us. If it doesn't in this life, it will in the life to come, if we don't repent of it and turn from it. So many times people act a fool. In a way, it doesn't make sense when it comes to money. And all of these did in a way that didn't make sense when it came to money. It also can happen in the area of morality. People often play the fool. Think about David. The foolish thing he ever did was in the affair that he had with Bathsheba. First of all, he was a king. He was in a high place. He'd been blessed. God had given him prosperity, even beyond prosperity. And not only that, he had wives and children, and he had goods and all of that. And of course, that's a time when, during that dispensation, that God allowed things that he didn't ultimately approve, such as many wives and polygamy and so forth. But nonetheless, he was prospered. That was considered prosperity in those days to have children and a number of children. He had that. And he was in a position to where he had a lot of honor and a lot of glory as a king. But one foolish day, he did one foolish thing. And that one thing stands out with David in spite of all else ever he's ever done, even to this day. He, up on the housetop, looked and saw Bathsheba. Had Bathsheba brought to him, committed adultery with her, became the father of her child, and then he had to do something about the husband. And then he had the husband killed. Nobody could look at that and say that anything that was, in that case, that David acted a fool. He threw morality to the wind in order for a few moments of fleshly pleasure. And that the consequence of that stayed with David the rest of his life. I believe David got forgiveness of it from all indications. But that being so, he still lived with the consequences of it. The first consequence was he lost that child. It died. And then the rest of his household had one problem right after another that came to him as a result of all that. It wasn't making good sense. It's acting a fool. The same thing's true of morality today. American morality, or immorality, more correctly, government officials get every news pass we have, at least it doesn't go very long, there's some scandal concerning some government official that's been involved in so things that are so gross that even this country with all of its tolerance is so gross that it brings them down from their high place of elected official, been elected official. Senators and congressmen have been brought down. One of our presidents was almost brought down because of his immorality. He escaped impeachment by a little bit, but he was not convicted. They went through the impeachment process. But the point I'm making is, when you look at it, hindsight, anybody with common sense will say that they act a fool to have all that they have and have all the honor that they have and all that bestowed upon them by the voting public, and then they will go out and act a fool in some immoral act or some immoral relationship. Business people do it, and sometimes even church people do it. And any time you do it, you act a fool because you always lose. Sooner or later, even in this life, people lose when they get involved in immorality, some way or the other. But, of course, the eternal consequences of it is even worse if they don't turn from it. But one needs to stop and think, and always, before they allow themselves to be tempted into any questionable or any moral misbehavior, they need to stop and think. this could bring me down. That is, whatever position I may be in, whatever reputation I might have, it could bring me down, and probably will bring you down. And one acts a fool when he does it. Also, it's true in the area of marriage. That's the third end, in marriage. When I think of those who act a fool in marriage, I think of Samson in the Old Testament. You remember Samson, the judge of Israel, a strong man, one who had the Nazarite vow and no razor come upon his head and all that. Strong as could be. We have the expression today sometimes, he could go bear hunting with a switch, because he had such power and was able to do such magnificent things with the bodily power that he had. But he had a problem. He had a weakness. That had the weakness had to do with the women he chose, and or to marry. In Judges 14, first three verses, and Samson went down to Timnah, saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Well, in the first place, he didn't have any business courting one of the daughters of the Philistines, because Samson was a Israelite. And God even chose him to be the judge to deliver the Israelites. And the Philistines were enemies, terrible enemies. But anyway, he went down, and he came up and told his father and mother and said, I've seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, therefore, get her for me to wife. Then his father and mother said to him, and can you imagine how many fathers and mothers have said this many times? Is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren or among all my people that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? Is there not one among us? And why do you go down and take one of those? One of those of the uncircumcised Philistines. And of course, among the Jews, it was both the law of God and the custom as well. They married among the Jews. And so they say, and notice what Samson said unto his father, get her for me, for she pleases me well. Son, you don't need her. She's not going to do you any good. She's among the Philistines, the uncircumcised Philistines, among the heathen, among the pagan. She's not going to do you any good. And his answer was not, well, I appreciate your advice. I think I'll back off. No, his answer was, get her for me. She pleaseth me well. He warned her. He was going to get her. He was going to have her. Whether he followed the advice of his and wisdom of his parents or not. Years ago, I heard the story of Brother E.A. Elam. Brother Elam was a preacher that taught at the old Bible school or college in Nashville that's now David Liston College. And he taught there, and some lady down in the southern part of Tennessee near the Alabama line wrote a letter and said, my daughter is going with this scoundrel. And said, now I want to know if there's anything I can say or do that will change her mind and get her away from him. But it says, it appears to me that she has got her mind made up to marry him, and I don't know what I can do. Can you help something to that effect? Brother Ethan wrote back and said, well, if she's already got her mind made up and set on it, said, the only thing I can recommend, you can always shoot her. So the idea was, once they got their mind made up, you can always, that's about all you can do. And a lot of times that's the case. Because sometimes people, young and old, can act a fool when it comes to the matter of marriage. And so Samson was one of those. But that didn't end with that one. In the 16th chapter, it came to pass afterward, they loved a woman of the valley of Sorek, and her name was Delilah. And then he took her. And it says, and the Philistines then went to her and told her to entice him and see wherein his strength lies, and by what means we may prevail against him, and we may bind him to afflict him, and we will give thee every one of us 1,100 pieces of silver. And Delilah said to Samson, tell me, I pray thee, wherein thy great strength lies. He played the fool again. A woman that he had no business with, Delilah. Delilah was cunning. She made a deal with the Philistines for a certain amount of money if she'd just find out where his strength was. She kept nagging him and nagging him until he finally told her where his strength was. It's in his hair. And she had it cut off. And you remember the Philistines then captured him. They hadn't been able to capture him before. They'd bind him and he'd always break loose and all that. And finally now, his strength was gone. They took him. They put out his eyes, made him blind. And finally, as the story ends, there was some redemption in that God granted the strength in the end to pull the fellows down upon the Philistines in the building and kill him and the Philistines as well. Of course, he killed more in his death than he did in while he lived. But the point is, he played the fool when it comes to the woman that he chose. And of course, most of us are well past that time that we're choosing mates. Sometimes some of the older folks do that. Anyway, but whether you're old or young, always be careful and make sure you're not playing the fool when that happens. Solomon is another example of one who played the fool when he came to women. Had 1,000 wives. Well, there's actually 700 wives and 300 concubines, as one little kid said in Bible class, porcupines. 300 concubines who were kind of the second-class wives. And in all of that is said of him in Nehemiah 3:26, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, even him did outlandish women fall to sin. Somebody said that Solomon, the wisest man that had lived at that time, that he drank the well of wisdom dry, turned off the faucet, and jerked up the pump before he finally died. Even outlandish wisdom caused him. So Herod the Great, the Herod that was in power at the time of John the Baptist, one I'm thinking of, that this Herod had his brother Philip's wife. He wasn't lawful to have her, though it says he married her. It was not lawful for him to have her. And of course, many today enter into unwise and unscriptural marriages. Whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, marries another, that commit adultery. And whosoever marries her that put away is put away that commit adultery. So one who puts away or divorces his wife or some any cause other than fornication marries another, they're playing the fool. And when one marries the one who's divorced, they're playing the fool, because the result is condemnation of their souls if they don't repent of it, get out of it, and ask God forgiveness in regard to it. Another M that we talk about, and that's in the area of manners, old-fashioned manners. The Bible teaches us that we are to have basically good manners. But you talk to folks now, as they deal with people who are supposed to be in public service, or maybe I should say the term customer service, manners are almost gone. Just being simply good manners toward one another in the workplace, in the marketplace, and just in the home. Anywhere that you go, manners have almost come to the point that they're almost obsolete. But the Bible teaches us some basic principles that we need to, as we used to say when I was growing up, watch your manners now. We need to watch them because 1 Peter 3:8 says, finally, you're all be of one mind, have compassion one for another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous. And what we used to call manners is just old-fashioned courtesy. Be courteous. Paul was even courteous to those who were trying him. Because notice the way he addressed Festus, who was the governor who had him on trial. He said, I'm not mad or crazy. That's what mad means there. I'm not mad or insane. Most noble Festus, but speak forth the words of truth and soberness. He spoke to Festus with courtesy. He recognized they need to do so. In our generation, we have a bunch of bad manners all around us. Bad manners of the younger to the older. 1 Timothy 5 says, rebuke not an elder. And that elder is not talking about an elder in the church, but an older person. But entreat him as a father, and younger men as brethren. Yet, many times, we see young people giving no deference at all to age, no deference at all whatsoever, and they speak in a fashion to them, in a way that they speak to their peer, and in the worst sort of way at that. We need to learn manners whether we're old or young, but sometimes we play the fool in that, and we don't know how to just show basic good manners. And I don't care how old we are, it's always a good thing to be able to show our raising, if you please, if we were raised to have good manners. Bad manners in our daily interactions and in public functions is really repulsive to anyone who has any degree of what good manners are, of being courteous, of being kind, and rather than seeing how harsh and how grumpy you can be, see how courteous and how kind you can be. Another M is in the area of the Messiah, that is, in the area of Christ. It was foolish for the Jews to reject the evidence of Messiah. The Jews, many of them, looking for the Messiah, yet they rejected the very evidence that would show them that he was the Messiah, he was the promised one of God. In Mark 3, 22 through 30, and the scribes which came down from Jerusalem said, he hath Beelzebub, by the prince of the devils cast he out devils. That didn't make sense. That didn't make sense. But they were playing the fool. They were so prejudiced against him as being the Christ, that they said, and they recognized that he was casting out devils, casting out demons. And they said, he hath Beelzebub, by the prince of the devils, he cast out devils. That doesn't make sense. And Jesus showed them it didn't make sense. And he called unto them, to them, and said unto them in parables, how can Satan cast out Satan? He said, it just don't make sense that Satan will be casting out Satan. But they were saying that's exactly what was happening, that he was doing it by the power of Beelzebub, and that was the case. You had Satan casting out his own. So he says, if a house divided against itself, it cannot stand. And if Satan rise up against himself and be divided, he cannot stand, but hath an end. And he goes on to talk about how that if you enter a strong man, the house is full of good. So you have to first bind the strong man, and then he will spoil his house. It don't make sense, he says to them, to say that Jesus was casting out demons by the power of the prince of demons, Beelzebub. But they had such an animosity, they made the accusation and showed the folly of it. And then he goes on to say, and warns them against blaspheming against the Holy Spirit, because they said, he hath an unclean spirit. They said that rather than by the power of God and by Holy Spirit, by an unclean spirit, he's casting out unclean spirits. Blasting out devils, that was foolishness. And in Galatians 3, Paul says it's foolish not to obey God. O foolish Galatians, who hath bewitched you that you should not obey the truth, before whose eyes Jesus had been evidently set forth, crucified among you. And it is foolish to not obey Christ, because Jesus Christ has been evidently set forth and crucified. That's evidence, ample evidence, of Jesus being the Christ, having been crucified and having been raised and been eyewitness accounts of all of it. How foolish it was then not to obey him if he'd done all that. But he said, O foolish Galatians, should it be with you that you should not obey the truth? And then the foolish virgins are another example of those who played the fool in relation to their salvation. They rejected the invitation by this, by default. They got there to the wedding feast. Five of them were wise, and five of them were foolish. The five who were wise had taken enough oil and made such provision by the trimming of their lamps and all. They had made such provision to enter in at the feast when the bridegroom was called. The foolish ones went without the oil that they needed. And so they realized that when they got there. And this is representative of the judgment. And they realized it, and they had then to go buy oil. And while they went to buy oil, then the bridegroom came, the wise went in, and the foolish were left out. So I said, by default, they rejected the invitation because they weren't prepared. It doesn't make sense to not be prepared for the judgment. It's coming, and it comes at an hour that men will not know. And you're not going to have time to make preparation then. The time is there. And so one has to be prepared whenever the judgment comes. These foolish ones, they went, they were waiting, and they realized they weren't prepared. They tried to make preparation, but then it's too late. The wise thing to have done was to come prepared, stay prepared, and they would have entered in with the others. They played the fool. They erred exceedingly. So, it was their last opportunity. And any time that one hears the gospel and has made things right with the Lord, that could be their last opportunity. And it just doesn't make sense to reject it. So, we ought not to find ourselves in a position that where we need to make the confession that Saul made, I played the fool. But if we do find ourselves in that position, we need to repent of it and turn from it and ask God's forgiveness. And one is playing the fool when he continues to reject the Lord's invitation to salvation. It may be that you're here tonight. Some way or the other, you accept the Lord's invitation, whether it be to obey the first principles or by way of being restored. The wise thing to do is to make things right with the Lord while you still have time and opportunity. Your subject, come while we stand, while we sing.